Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So much trauma. And yet, you were safe as kittens the whole time. So what I see here is a baby witch obsessed with sitcoms and years of therapy ahead of her. Doesn't explain your recent hijinks.
Where'd you get the big guns, Wanda? But it's good medicine, Angel. The only way forward is back.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney+. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU Diaries. I am your host, Blake Larson, for today. And man, I told you nerds that I would get all these done before the finale of WandaVision premieres on Friday. And for those of you who are just listening in live time, this is my birthday. Today is my birthday, and I am podcasting on my birthday because it makes me happy, and it is something that I love to do. I've discovered through years of therapy that podcasting is a vital part to the core that exists within me, and today we are talking about a lot of therapeutic stuff, so it is apropos that I have this podcast on my birthday. Which is very, very exciting. And what an episode it was, ladies and gents. This episode just blew my doors off. In every way, it is so smart, and it is so well shot, so well directed. Oh, man. This is the kind of show that I expect from WandaVision. This is the kind of show that I expect from the MCU. And this is the kind of show that I hope we get going forward after WandaVision and we move on to the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and we do that. I hope we get all of it. So, oh man, I'm excited about this. But before we get into our analysis of episode 108 previously on, I wanted to remind you that you can go to maryandblake.com, check out all the great podcasts we have there. And if this is the first time that you're joining us, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much. A lot of you have been listening out there. I'm very excited about it. And search us out on all the social media, just Mary and Blake. We're there. We're on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of it, including our own Facebook group. It's just called the Mary and Blake Facebook group. A bunch of nerds all get together and chat together about all the nerdy things that they love. Man, it's a great community to be a part of. So please check us out. Get in touch. Have some fun. Let's chat some WandaVision. Now let's do it for the penultimate episode. Yes, this is the penultimate episode of WandaVision, as titled previously on. And this episode, as we just mentioned, is very special. It serves as, I think, an exercise in Wanda's fragile psychology, while also exhibiting a really, truly magnificent balance of exposition and plot. And the most important thing, character. Because what is a Mary and Blake commandment? Character always drives plot. Plot shall never drive character. And we see that even though this episode looks super plotty, it really isn't. It's all based on character, and we're going to get into that now. We have finally been made privy to the entire storyline for WandaVision and leading up to what has now become Wanda's sitcom life. In this exposition-heavy episode, we ditch the television sitcom conceit. We see all of the motivations, and we see all of the callbacks and why they are where they are in Wanda's life. We've been shown new information. We have examined previously known facts in Wanda's life, and we've even now recontextualized information that we thought was based in solid footing. I'm looking at you, Tyler Hayward, and Wanda stealing Vision's body. In what is a choice I think only an extremely talented writing staff would dare take on, Jack Schaefer, the showrunner, and her crew have chosen to look back for their penultimate episode of WandaVision. As opposed to the more conventional storytelling choice of actually building momentum toward what will surely be an epic finale between Wanda, Agatha, White Vision, and we will go over that in a minute, Tyler Hayward, and Pietro. Yes, we will discuss Pietro too, and of course, Monica. Setting focus on what has brought us to this moment is not an unprecedented choice in television. I mean, looking back for your penultimate, it's not unprecedented. It's happened before. As a matter of fact, Damon Lindelof pulled the same maneuver to widespread acclaim on another show I covered called The Leftovers. It was very similar in style for his penultimate episode of season one, which, oddly enough, The Leftovers is also a show based on the effect of grief. I mean, it's really not even unprecedented within WandaVision's own run, as we have had a similar style episode in episode 104, We Interrupt This Program, when, if you remember, we took a look back and took a detour as to what happened outside Wanda's cosmic bubble in the greater MCU world when we focused on Monica. And while the exploration of Monica's circumstances in 104 was a success in its own right, and it opened up the MCU world, it did just that. It opened up the rest of the storyline for where WandaVision was going. But this episode is different. This extensive journey through Wanda's past is vastly different than 104. Like Damon Lindelof's trip down memory lane in 109 of The Leftovers called The Garveys at Their Best. By the way, The Leftovers is one of my favorite television shows of all time. Season 2 of The Leftovers, I think, yeah, I would make the argument is the perfect season of television, but I'll leave it at that. Like The Garveys at Their Best, WandaVision's previously on, it feels purposeful and specific in its intent. Sure, I mean, yeah, we witness how Wanda lived through the famed story of waiting for a Stark bomb to explode in her living room as a child, which was originally told that story by Pietro in Avengers Age of Ultron. Yes, we also see how she, Wanda, apparently survived experimentation by Hydra, how Vision helped ease her grief after Pietro's death, and ultimately how Tyler Hayward even, again, lied about Wanda seizing Vision's vibranium corpse upon defeating Thanos in Avengers Endgame. These are all important events, and the plot of these events, though, while important, they're not as pivotal as what we learn about Wanda's character via the Agatha-induced trek through Wanda's complex past. What did we learn? What did we learn about Wanda's character? We learned about the creation of a defense mechanism that Wanda has utilized to shield herself from her reality. Using her powers to shield herself from all of her grief. The key to this complexity, though, and the complexity of this episode, is, in fact, marrying the plot basically what happened before WandaVision, meaning the show within our show, became a reality. And marrying that to telling those events in a compelling manner via the exposition, and then ultimately rooting the whole affair in what matters most to the story, how it affects Wanda and the defense mechanism she has created as a result of the plot. Previously on is an exploration, ultimately, in Wanda's strengths and her weaknesses as it relates to her psychology and how those strengths and weaknesses are reflected through the events that we witness in WandaVision the series. If you watched WandaVision with a discerning eye, especially those first three episodes, you knew what we were watching was an examination of grief and trauma. And this episode very much follows suit. The difference between our experiences from the previous episodes and this episode is that our plot mechanics, the things that are happening, and the exposition dumps that are explaining those plot mechanisms are relegated to the real world. We've ditched the sitcom conceit. We are in full MCU storytelling mode right now. In other words, what we have watched now is truly more exemplary of Wanda's actual reality and how that actual reality affects her and her surrounding world. This choice to do this is in stark contrast to the fictionalized version of WandaVision that Wanda uses to heal the wounds from her past trauma. I mean, ultimately, Wanda's real world now, as we talked about in the previous episode of the MCU Diaries, Wanda's real world is now informing her fictionalized world. And as a result, the fictionalized world is a commentary on her trauma from the real world. That, yes, I bet you're in a freaking mental pretzel right now. I get it. I don't mean to put you in a pretzel, but in the end, Wanda's real world is creating this defense mechanism, and the defense mechanism is now commenting on Wanda's real world, and it is now affecting the world around her as a result. That grief and trauma are a powerful force for Wanda. And I want to reference one of my favorite storytelling books. I do a lot of reading about storytelling, and I do a lot of reading about how to create scripts and all this stuff, just because I'm a dork and I like to do that. There's a great book called Into the Woods, A Five-Act Journey into Story from John York. And as it relates to the story of grief and trauma, I want to quote one of his paragraphs in it. In it, he says, "Our story matches psychological theory. Characters are taken on a journey to acknowledge and assimilate the traumas in their past. By confronting and coming to terms with the cause of their traumas, they can finally move on." Agatha forces Wanda to confront her trauma. Now, in Agatha's case, it may not be for the altruistic reason of just trying to heal wounds that Wanda suffers from. But regardless of Agatha's intent or her motivation, there is a reckoning nonetheless. And despite the fact that Agatha is only poking and prodding to discover Wanda's secret of controlling this town, magic on autopilot, as Agatha describes it, Agatha unknowingly unearths Wanda's very specific defense mechanism for trauma. That is the creation of a fictionalized Westview in the show, within our show, WandaVision. In discovering that defense mechanism, though, Agatha also cuts to the very core of what it means to exist as Wanda in this very moment: pain, suffering, and loss. Yes, these discoveries come to you by the way of exposition, when people are just talking, and talking about each other and talking about things that they're seeing on screen and talking about how they feel. Hey, talk. So much talk. Yes, that is true. But it is also dependent on the plot that you may or may not know from the previous films. And what underscores the plot, though, and what makes the talk all very okay and worth it, is the very real characterization that is a consequence of this plot. Deep wounds are formed from Wanda's life, like losing her parents, losing her country, being ultimately tricked by Ultron, even though that wasn't something that they entirely went into detail in this episode, but that is true nonetheless. Being experimented on, Pietro's death, and ultimately Vision's death. And in response to these extraordinarily cavernous wounds, Wanda's response in all of this is to cover up her weaknesses with a facade of actions that protect that very specific and extremely huge wound. I mean, first, it was her love of television sitcoms, as defined by The Dick Van Dyke Show, Bewitched, The Brady Bunch, Malcolm in the Middle. And then it was taking action in volunteering at Hydra. And then it was joining the Avengers. These are all acts to push away and cover up her deep core of pain that she suffers from. And what also lies beneath the surface of this heavy plot in this episode is Wanda's desire to be needed, feel the lost love of her family, and operate as part of a larger purpose. These efforts culminate in the creation of WandaVision, the show within our show, at Westview. It protects her from the endless nothingness that she feels. And we end up discovering that that endless nothingness is because she leaves Vision at S.W.O.R.D. and she goes to see her unbuilt home. Journeying through Wanda's psyche, however, is not localized to the events of just her past. We see her responses to Agatha as natural extensions of her defense mechanisms, which were established in these flashbacks. As we played at the top of our episode here, Wanda defies Agatha at every turn. She refuses to take part. She does not want to do it. She even at one point tries to lash out with her powers, and Agatha, however, of course, neutralizes any chance Wanda has by voiding the magic in her super creepy witch lair with various enchantments and in ancient runes. Yes, this is, again, all very super plotty. It's like, okay, we're going to do this because of that, and she can't have magic because of this. I get it. It's all very plot. But as plotty as it all may sound, the larger effect is still valid. Agatha, in this moment, is in a position of power and has no problem flexing her very advanced magic muscles to get whatever she wants, which, by the way, as part of her character, part of her characterization, that builds on and validates the episode opening, which began in the 17th century Salem, where she kills her entire coven. It shows you, even though it's super plotty, it shows you the kind of person Agatha is. Wanda, in this case, in Agatha's super creepy witch lair, she cannot use her defense mechanisms. So she's forced to finally confront her truth once Agatha threatens Wanda's children. And despite Agatha's affirmation of her power and Wanda's willingness to cooperate once she's forcibly coerced, the answers that are so desperately sought after by Agatha, they're not easy to come by. And it's not even Wanda's choice necessarily. Like most people who suffer from immense trauma and depression, Wanda has erected walls around her wounds. As such, she still truly doesn't know how or why she even created those walls to begin with. They're just there. One minute, Wanda was grieving, and the next minute, in her eyes, she was in WandaVision, our show within a show. We, as viewers, see this cognitive dissonance, and it's frustrating because we see it all. We see the truth. But Wanda, as a character, refuses to acknowledge that truth, even as she bears witness to it with Agatha. Again, this is her defense mechanism. And as frustrated as we may be, though, the defiance is another subtle part, again, of Wanda's defense mechanism to protect the wounds from which she has suffered. And we're getting a chance to see that this entire episode. So when Wanda does not acknowledge her reality of loss and suffering by refusing to partake in the mental exercise, this is the same response she chooses when she willingly accepts life in WandaVision. Subject to insignificant stakes, Wanda does not have to move forward or grow in her sitcom world. Most importantly, she does not have to face her grief because she can live with a vision she has simply created from the ferocity of her magic and from the supernatural source of the Mind Stone. Wanda's natural reaction when these things and these tenets of her sitcom life, her reaction to when somebody doesn't conform to that, or wants to challenge the truth of that lifestyle, like Monica, or in this case, Agatha, ooh, her natural reaction is to go to violence and to push back. Again, her defense mechanism. And the growth we experience via Agatha's emotional investigation is that Wanda is forced to see her wounds through this defense mechanism to understand her reality. No, that bomb did not go off because she was lucky, but because it was a latent power of which she was unaware. She didn't survive the Mind Stone experimentation because of her will and hatred, as she and her brother Pietro and ultimately Ultron once believed. No. She survived it because she tapped into her strength. Vision's loss is certainly one of tragedy and sadness that sends Wanda on this path of trauma, as is Pietro's death. But as we discover, what is grief if not love persevering? Finally, how was Westview created? Wanda's strength and inner power became her defense mechanism. That created Westview. Her strength and her power, what you have now recognized, and if you're watching this with intent, you realize that her strength and power are now her weakness. Because it has forced her to not live in her reality. Part of that growth and transition for Wanda is that she only continues to move through Agatha's charade because she's consistently reminded of the danger facing her children. That is, until she's pushed to witness the beginnings of her relationship with Vision at the Avengers headquarters between the events of Avengers Age of Ultron and Captain America Civil War. Paramount to her growth and our experience within that growth, both we and Wanda learn that it is Vision who ties Wanda's love of television, acceptance, and catharsis in what is by far the most effective sequence of this episode. Wanda reliving her memory of watching Malcolm in the Middle That's what gives her the power to move forward, just as it did in reality after Pietro died. As a quick aside, this scene, you know what? I'm just going to play this scene. This scene could exist as the sole justification for the entire WandaVision series. You know what? I'm just going to play it for you just because it is that stunning. This scene is by far the best scene in the whole episode.
It is funny because of the grievous injury the man just suffered.
No, he's not really injured.
Ah. How can you be certain?
It's not that kind of show.
Wanda, I don't presume to know what you're feeling, but I would like to know, should you wish to tell me, should that be of some comfort to you?
What makes you think that talking about it would bring me comfort?
Oh, see, I read that...
The only thing that would bring me comfort is seeing him again. Wave washing over me again and again. It knocks me down, and when I try to stand up, it just comes for me again. And I can't. It's just gonna drown me.
No. No, it won't.
How do you know?
Well, because it can't all be sorrow, can it? I've always been alone, so I don't feel the lack. It's all I've ever known. I've never experienced loss because I've never had a loved one to lose. But what is grief, if not love persevering?
I'm in my studio and I'm watching this as I'm recording this episode, and I'm tearing up thinking about it and watching it. But this scene here is an exact replica of what is happening in WandaVision right now. The beginning of this scene starts with Wanda and Vision talking about the events of Malcolm in the Middle and how it is going to hurt Bryan Cranston, but it's never going to hurt him because it's not that kind of show. She talks about the safety of it and how all she wants is just to see her brother again, and she is lost. She feels this unending grief, it's a wave that keeps coming and hits her and she can't get back up. This is important. This is important because it is an example of what is happening in WandaVision. You know, as we have discussed, Wanda's characterization has really suffered in the MCU. Previously on reminds us that Wanda is a real person who is simultaneously mending and avoiding her wounds by utilizing her greatest strength, which we have already established, is her powers and her ability. But that also happens at the same time to be her greatest weakness now at this point. The vulnerability exhibited by Wanda and Vision in front of that TV speaks to the uniting power of television, which I firmly believe in, but also the shared, genuine affection between the two. And as such, we viewers can latch on to this authentic feeling that drives our compassion the way that it does for Wanda. We care. Wanda searches for purpose after her brother's death, while Vision also, too, searches for meaning after his abrupt creation, and the answer to both questions sits before them right in front of each other. They are the answer to each other's searching. The odd part is that Wanda does not see this necessarily without the trip down memory lane forced upon her by Agatha. And Agatha is a curious case here because she is clearly an antagonist for Wanda. Let's take a step back here to analyze the situation from a higher perch, shall we? In Agatha, we see someone who is very much the same as Wanda. Powerful, determined, and filled with trauma over a loved one's death. During her journey, however, Agatha has made choices in her life that make her the opposite of Wanda in every way. Agatha seeks knowledge for the sake of gaining power, whereas Wanda uses her power for the sake of her defense mechanisms. It is always vitally important to have your antagonist, the bad guy, the protagonist, the good guy, or gal, whatever, doesn't matter. Having them be mirrors of each other. But again, mirror, using that word very purposely, as opposites of each other. Their defining characteristics can be the same, or they can echo each other. But the difference between the two is the choices that they make in their life to set them on the same course. A protagonist, antagonist, and an antagonist have to compete for the same thing. It's all just the only difference between them is just how they go about doing it. In terms of Agatha, what we discover is that she and Wanda, they're still, and they are, competing for the same thing. And that is the power to protect themselves from their deep-rooted wounds. In discovering how Wanda does her magic, Agatha uncovers what Wanda really is, a conjurer of chaos magic. She's the Scarlet Witch. The Scarlet Witch revelation reveals Wanda's true nature, and it obviously terrifies Agatha. Is it by design that the Scarlet Witch wears the same headdress as Agatha's mother? Is it by design that Agatha wants to kill Wanda, who is unable to give her the knowledge that she so desires? Is it much in the same way that Agatha wanted to kill her mother, because Agatha's mother couldn't give her acceptance? Revealing Wanda's true nature is what sets up our conflict, but also what marks Agatha and Wanda as the respective antagonist and protagonist of this story. And to that end, it is only through Agatha that Wanda recognizes that the only person who is keeping her back, it's not Vision, Pietro, or even Agatha for that matter. It's Wanda. It's herself. What's going to happen from here? This is the penultimate episode, right? What's happening in the finale? Wanda may have confronted all that makes her defense mechanisms a reality, but there still has yet to be an actual process of change. That's where the next episode, and I think her battle with White Vision, comes in. I know that people will probably chatter about how this episode was just a recap of previous events we already knew about, while they aren't wrong, necessarily. I don't think that they're seeing the point of what showrunner Jack Schaefer is trying to accomplish. The events of this plot lead us, and most importantly, Wanda, on a journey to confront her grief, but also find the strength to move past that grief. In looking at Wanda's defense mechanism, we recognize Wanda's reactions to Agatha as her reactions to all of the major events of her life. Whether it was denial, anger, or even violent aggression. Time for Apropos of Nothing for WandaVision episode 108, previously on. First, Agatha's quest for power and knowledge has defined her life. She may not have betrayed her coven in the quest for dark magic because it bent to her power, but that desire is what kills her mother. Perhaps Agatha's defense mechanism to this trauma is the true knowledge to all-encompassing magic, what she believes that Wanda has. We see where the brooch Agatha has been wearing, we see where it comes from, and the one that she's been wearing this entire time. Again, notice that Agatha's mother's powers form a similar headdress to what the Scarlet Witch wears in Wanda's mind's eye. Third, Agatha seems to sense Wanda's magic and apparently comes to town right after the creation of the cosmic bubble with the intent to discover the catalyst to the magic. Who are you? All those costumes and hairstyles. I was so patient waiting for you to reveal your true self. I got so close with fake Pietro. Fietro, if you will, but no dice. Fietro is the greatest name ever created in the MCU canon. Fourth, Agatha, no, was not Pietro or fake Pietro. Fake Pietro just served as her eyes and ears, and he was what Agatha refers to as a crystalline possession, because Pietro's actual body was across the world, making necromancy impossible. But Wanda was so crippled by the self-doubt that she succumbed to the illusion of fake Pietro. So maybe this is a bit of stunt casting by Marvel Studios, including Evan Peters, and bringing to light the possibility of there being a tear in reality in the multiverse. We'll see. Agatha posits that the Mind Stone did not give Wanda her powers. Instead, it amplified what should have died on the vine. This is an excellent pseudo-retcon or reimagining of Wanda's established mythology in the MCU. By the way, you're hearing my children in the background. We're about to go to dinner soon, so I'm gonna pick this one up here. Oh, Tyler Hayward, yes, he really is the bad guy, and he is a dink. He lied and fabricated tape to make Wanda look like she stole Vision's body. Perhaps this is why he sent Monica all along? Perhaps this is why he was able to set up a headquarters so quickly, because he knew he needed Wanda's power to jumpstart Vision? Yes, let's talk about Vision. White Vision. Oh, yes, if you watched those mid-credit scenes, you saw a white Vision. Seeing white Vision, yeah.
Not great, Bob!
White Vision is indeed the actual Vision that has been put back together by S.W.O.R.D. But the problem is that White Vision is nothing more than a weapon now. His memory, at least within the comic version of himself, his memory is now gone. It's been wiped, and even all the parts of Jarvis and Ultron that were comprised his being, they're now gone too. His love of Wanda, his attachment to the human race, and his genuinely affectionate demeanor are gone. He is, for the lack of a better term, a soulless hunk of vibranium. Now, his only purpose is to kill. And in the comics, this is the precursor to Wanda losing her children, and given the precarious spot her kids are in right now, as Agatha is holding them with, like, purple strings of magic, you can only imagine where the finale is heading. And speaking of Wanda, how she's been taken through a bullet point version of her grief, and now recognize the answer to that grief, you can also imagine that she is not going to be happy when she is confronted by the actual Vision, who does not recognize her. You want to talk about trauma? Ooh, boy. Yes, once again.
Not great, Bob!
And speaking of that, Elizabeth Olsen is gold in every scene of this episode. And whether she remains an Avenger or briefly turns into a villain because of the shenanigans that are happening and are going to happen if it holds true to the comics, this has been, it remains to be seen. But Olsen is a powerhouse, and you can see why the story has been developed as the flagship TV series for the MCU. She sells every tear, every wince, and every single ounce of anger, and I legitimately am honored to watch this television show. Wanda has the deed to a property she apparently purchased with Vision in Westview. And on the deed is a note that says to grow old in. V. Oh my goodness gracious, tears. So many tears. When she sees the unbuilt home in Westview and all of the side characters that we have now come to know so far, Wanda's chaos magic takes effect and she builds a brand new town, just straight out of her. And she also manifests a brand new vision straight out of her magical ability. No, it was not a reanimated corpse of Vision. It was just her ability that manifested Vision. This is probably why he doesn't remember anything prior to Westview, and also why he cannot leave the boundaries of Wanda's cosmic bubble. Yes, this episode is very exposition heavy. Everybody is talking. Everybody's talking at each other, trying to tell you what's going on. And in most cases, exposition sucks because it's just people talking at you without telling you, without showing you. But exposition can also be very beneficial as long as it's executed in the right manner. Think the Dino DNA sequence in Jurassic Park. It was excellent. That is perfect exposition. And in this case, for WandaVision, we get a similar effect done by Agatha. Agatha changes bugs to birds and she uses a visually dynamic examples to best explain what actually happened in Westview. And lastly, the toaster commercial from the first episode is recontextualized as a reference to the Stark Industries bomb that started Wanda down this path. That commercial also had the red blinking red light, despite the commercial being shot in a native black and white. And because of this episode, we now recognize that the bomb itself had the same blinking red light and sound. This is great stuff. I really loved this episode. I loved, loved, loved. This episode justifies everything. It justifies the entire WandaVision series. Even if you didn't like those first two or three episodes, it justifies it now because you get an example of how this trauma and the wounds caused a defense mechanism and what that defense mechanism does to protect from those wounds. And it just so happens to be in the form of sitcom television. That's beautiful. And it tells you so much more about Wanda. And when you see Wanda in future movies, you're going to be thinking about this conversation between Wanda and Vision. All right, that's it for now, ladies and gents. We're going to be watching the finale together. We're going to be talking about it together. So make sure you stick to this space, as those kids are wont to say, stick to the space. And you'll see the episode here. You'll also see the article at maryandblake.com for the finale. Now that we're all caught up. Oh, man, I'm so excited. All right, let's close this out, shall we? Yes, that's right. You can read all of these articles and essays at maryandblake.com if you like. If you're at work and you're trying to avoid as much work as possible like I do, you want to read about WandaVision, you want to nerd out, go to maryandblake.com. Just look up the MCU Diaries, the blog version. It's all there. You can read it all, have some fun. Also, if you want to avoid work the best that you can, go to jointhenerdclan.com, where you can find all a bunch of other nerds who are avoiding work to talk about the nerdy things that they love. It is a great community. It is a very special community. Don't miss out on there. There you get some extra bonus episodes, premium podcasts, and all the great swag and book clubs and all the stuff that my wife and I do. Yes, I'm still going to try to have Mary join me on the finale episode. We shall see. I don't know quite yet. She's very busy. She's got her own things going on, producing her own stuff. So, man, I hope she can join me at least for a little bit. But yeah, what an episode, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this. I can't wait for the finale. We're going to watch it together and talk about it together. Until next time, ladies and gents, I'll see you next episode.